What if one of the secrets to longevity doesn't need to be a workout plan or a diet, but can actually just be your garden and the act of gardening? I am so excited about today's episode. Rhonda Fleming Hayes, she's the author of Garden for Life, and she is an advocate for seniors who want to garden, but do it in a way that is safe for them and accommodating as they age gracefully into their next season of life. There's so many things that go into gardening as a senior when you're shifting from working to being retired, juggling grandkids, juggling maybe limited mobility and all sorts of other things that come up. And Rhonda has lived this herself and is such a great educator on how gardening just simply needs to evolve as we age. It doesn't mean that you can't do it anymore. It actually means that you can enjoy it even more if you intentionally make a few shifts to set yourself up for success at that 55 to 60 mark. Because gardening is ultimately a mind-body practice, and it's something that we should be doing from the minute we are born to the minute we die, in my opinion. Today's conversation, you're going to learn how to adapt to your space, tech your joy in the garden, and stay connected to your plants in every season of life.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Hello, plant friends. My name is Maria. I am your new best plant friend. If you're new here, welcome. Nice to meet you. If you are a returning guest, hello. Welcome back. So happy to have you. I help you grow joy by connecting with plants. And I love this idea that gardening is a lifelong hobby. And I plan to be gardening well into my 80s and 90s. And this episode was very eye-opening for that. And also, as I have parents that are aging and I have my mom who loves to garden, this episode was also really helpful for me just as a support system for someone going through this transition in their life. So I hope you love this episode as much as I do. And please send this to someone in your life who is either going through this transition and wanting to garden, or someone who is supporting someone going through this transition, because we can age gratefully in every decade, in every season of life, and plants can be by our side the whole dang time. So without further ado, here's Rhonda. Joy. Hi, Rhonda. Welcome to Growing Joy.
Thanks for having me. Hi.
I'm so excited to chat with you because this is a very important topic. When your publicist reached out to me, you know, older gardeners, senior gardeners. So first off, as we move into this conversation about, you know, growing a garden for your whole life, what are the vocabulary words that are appropriate that we should be using, and what shouldn't we be using when talking about the senior gardener demographic?
Well, in the book, I wrestled with this at first. What should we call ourselves? And I actually threw it out to social media and got all sorts of interesting responses. What do we want to call ourselves? I was going for gracefully aging gardener, but then older gardener, you know, it is what it is. Seasoned gardeners, experienced gardeners. When I was writing the book, it was like I kind of delved into the whole idea of ageism and how a lot of ageism just kind of goes unnoticed. And we often do it. Older people actually often inflicted upon ourselves. I'm guilty of sometimes calling myself an old woman, you know, but as far as what to call us when we're just talking about it, I think senior gardeners, older gardeners, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. And for the purposes of this conversation, is there an age starting point that you feel like groups this demographic that we're talking about? Over 50, over 60, is there an age bracket we're talking about?
I think we're targeting people 55 and older specifically. Okay. I think that's where people start to go through lots of life changes that can affect how they garden, when they garden, how much they garden. So, you know, that's when people are starting to retire or thinking about more travel. They have grandchildren that change their priorities. I think that's fair to say 55 and up. I think a lot of us in the book were pictured are definitely in our 60s, 70s, and then some 80s. So it's still a broad range.
It's interesting because when I think about the best gardening advice I've ever gotten, it's always been from senior gardeners. And there's this concept, you know, from the tribal society that we evolved in is having your elders be the knowledge keepers. And the elders are the most revered and, you know, respected members of the community, and they pass down their knowledge. And I think you're right that there is ageism and there is some forgetting of the importance of gardeners who have literally been gardening for sometimes 40 or 50 years. Think about how many turns of the seasons. Think about how many growing seasons that can be. So I'd love to ask you, like, what's your gardening journey been?
Well, thank you for acknowledging, you know, the value of elders. I myself started gardening when I was growing up in Southern California, tagging along after my grandmother. Mm. And that was a hugely formative experience for me. So yeah, there's so much value in grandparents passing down that information. And now, you know, kids are so overscheduled and overscreened. I still tell people, you know, playing with dirt and bugs may sound too simple nowadays, but it's still a really valuable experience. So I started off with my grandmother, and then
in what garden zone, in what area of the country?
Oh, that was in Southern California where I grew up. But then I married a man who was subject to moving, subject to transfer. And so I have gardened in, bear with me here, Tennessee, Kansas twice, Illinois twice, Iowa, even England, and then finally Minnesota. And and now here I am spending winters in New Orleans. So I'm even doing a little gardening there, but not much.
Yeah.
So lots of different climates and gardening growing zones.
That's amazing. And that is something you only get with time and putting your reps in, because it's one thing to understand, okay, I've gardened in zone 5 and I've gardened in zone 10, but each of those zones also come with very unique problems that arrive, or conditions. Like you're saying Kansas and I'm thinking tornadoes. You're saying Illinois and I'm thinking blizzards. You're saying Southern California and I'm thinking the world's perfect weather. You know, I live in South Florida, so I'm in zone 10B. So I get hurricanes all the time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But there's a learning curve for every single one. You're not going to nail that first season where you live if you do move. So the fact that you've moved and gardened in so many different areas makes you an unbelievable treasure trove of gardening advice.
Or treasuring frustration. No, or treasure of frustration.
Right.
You've because experienced sometimes all we only live there for a short time and I didn't get to figure it all out.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah.
How has your relationship with gardening changed as you've gotten older?
Well, you know, I was able to, through all those moves, what I say, try on lots of different gardens. And I was always adapting to different gardens and lots of times taking over somebody else's garden and trying to make it my own. But eventually when we ended up in Minnesota, where we actually built a home, I was able to actually plan a garden for the first time for myself. And I had already started thinking about, you know, I was in my then, and it was like thinking about, I'm going to make things easier on myself, but I'm also going to only garden in the way that I want to. I'm not going to have to deal with this big acre of property. It's going to be smaller, and I'm only going to incorporate those things that I really enjoy about gardening. So I have a pollinator-friendly landscape out front. I have a kitchen garden, and then I have a very minimal backyard, but I get plenty of, you know, gardening joy from all of that.
Okay, very interesting. So it sounds like you still love your passion for gardening, but you approach it from a much more pared back lens.
Yes. And I'm still evolving as that, you know, as I age, I'm almost 70 now. And so I am switching to more raised beds, more containers, more vertical methods of growing so that I'm not crawling around on the ground all the time. And that, you know, it just makes it more fun.
Yeah. What are some of the top mistakes you see senior gardeners making when it comes to continuing to garden?
Well, I think, you know, you're in that situation as you get older. Are you going to do what you know, you've heard the term age in place. Do you want to stay in your home? You know, and here I have to kind of add this disclaimer. There are so many different kinds of properties and gardens, so mm-hmm. I can't be really specific, but a lot of people want to stay in their home. And that's for reasons of, you know, community, familiarity, but they're by family, something like that. But in many cases, they've developed this really large garden. And at some point, it goes from being a joy to a chore. And so if you want to keep living in that place, it's how do you go about making the garden more manageable? And in some cases, it could be concentrating all the cultivated areas of the garden closer to the house and maybe further away from the house, either reducing maintenance or paying for help to maintain the rest of that property so that you're reducing the size of the garden while staying in place. There's other times where people are going to be moving. They're going to be going to a condo or apartment or something like that, but there's still going to be opportunities to garden. If you have that large garden, it could be that you have overgrown plants that have kind of, you know, they're past their sell-by date, and a lot of people hesitate to get rid of those plants. But I think the sooner you kind of edit your garden, the more you're going to be able to enjoy it. I think that, you know, sometimes we always tend to think of the solution being in plants, but for a gardener, the mistake might be not, I don't know if we call it a mistake, but it might be that they'd want to create more accessibility for their garden, more opportunities to actually be out there. Maybe you want new walkways or several different seating areas where you can go out there and just simply be in your garden. Mm-hmm. So maybe to call it a mistake would be to put off creating a better garden and a different garden. You know, maybe gardening just looks different at this age.
Yeah, staying stuck in your old ways. I feel like that 55 plus, that transition in life that you mentioned, having grandkids, moving, retiring, like all of these things, it applies to gardening too, right? Like you have to shift and adjust to your new lifestyle. And with your garden, I was talking to my mom this morning. I was telling her that I was interviewing, and she was like, my mom's an incredible gardener. She has been an in-ground gardener her whole life, and she's just been unbelievable. She has like a full edible landscape in her front yard that you'd never know was a tomato hedge and sunflowers and everything. And now she only gardens in raised beds now. And she was like, I can't imagine crawling around on my knees the way I used to. Like, I can't imagine. I wouldn't do it. And she also has gardeners who help her with her landscape. And then she has her raised beds that she's in control of. And, you know, that shift was really important for her. And I'm happy she recognized that because there are so many benefits. So why do you think it's important to continue gardening and not just kind of abandon it?
Well, let's see if I can get the saying right. You don't stop gardening when you grow old. You grow old when you stop gardening. Did I get that right?
That's beautiful. I love that.
I think that you want to continue to reap the benefits of gardening. You know, through my work as a garden writer, I interview lots of gardeners, and I, over and over, it's some of the best gardens are people that are in their 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I just look at them and think, how do you continue to do this? Oh my goodness. And I think, well, you know, these gardeners have found the fountain of youth, but it's actually a garden. Mm-hmm. And it's the fact that you keep moving, and it's natural movement. It's not like going to the gym. It's natural movement, sometimes referred to as variety of movement. You're using your large muscles when you're digging and raking and doing all that big stuff. And then when you're weeding and deadheading, picking tomatoes, you're using your hands, and you're exercising your fine motor skills. And so there's all that movement, and you don't even really think about doing it. You're not counting reps. You're just out there. And then, you know, you kind of get lost in that world. And so there's all sorts of mental health benefits, you know, de-stressing. But overall health, it means, you know, I cite the Mayo Clinic from Minnesota a lot. It's lower blood pressure. It boosts your immune system. Like I said, helps eliminate stress. And in the end, that's going to give you better sleep and gardeners have better nutrition because they're often growing their own food. Uh-huh. So, you know, there's just so many benefits, and it's sometimes called a full mind-body workout.
I love that. Yeah. I think there's a community element to it too.
Oh, definitely. Gardening. There's the social aspect.
So there's a great book that just came out that I think is perfect for a gardener. It's not a how-to book. It's not like a how to grow this or how to grow that. It's a book that explores how plants manage to push through the cracks of our concrete world and what that resilience can teach us. It's called Concrete Botany by Joey Santore. So Joey takes you through the tough places where native plants fight to survive and shows how understanding their ecology can help us restore biodiversity right where we live. It's a raw look at the damage that humans have caused to the natural world, but also an inspiring reminder that healing starts small in our yards, in our neighborhoods, in our gardens, and in the choices that we make every day. So it's a really planty-informed book that isn't necessarily like super prescriptive. And it's really interesting. So you should check out Concrete Botany by Joey Santore, and you can get it anywhere books are sold. Once again, that's Concrete Botany by Joey Santore, anywhere books are sold. Yeah, it keeps you connected. And I know that, you know, as you age and lose people and, you know, life changes, you can become more isolated. And, you know, one of the most rewarding gardening experiences I ever had was with this, you know, 80-year-old woman, Melody, who my first year gardening in the Catskills in upstate New York, we met on nextdoor.com. We were complete strangers. I was asking for gardening advice because I had never dealt with bears in my area before. And so all of a sudden I realized I needed a deer fence. I needed a fence and I had never done that. And so I put this like manic post on Nextdoor saying, hey, does anyone have experience keeping bears and deer out of their gardens? Melody like called me. We had an hour long conversation and I ended up gardening with her all summer. And she had more than an acre of edible and flower garden. She had the most incredible soil I'd ever seen in my life because she had been feeding it for like 4 decades. And it was the best, but it was like social. We felt like we used to say it was a tough time in both of our lives. And we felt like we would say we were each other's like heaven sent angels.
Sweet.
Yeah. We were sent to each other in this moment, not just for me to learn to garden from her and also for her to use my back to plant her garden. You know, I gave her a lot of manual labor. But there was like a very social, emotional component to that. And, you know, it'll be one of the most treasured summers of my life.
I was just going to say that one of the most inspirational gardeners is my friend across the street. And she kind of uses that buddy system. And in my book, I talk about finding help, different types of help. And that, what you just mentioned, is the kind that I call companionable help. Mm-hmm. And you know, you find somebody and exactly, you had the strong back and she had the knowledge.
Yeah.
But my friend across the street, there's not as big an age difference, but she has found somebody that she gets along really well with and she gardens alongside them. Mm-hmm. And that person then keeps her company and provides the muscle that maybe she doesn't have right now. So it's a really good point. That was a great illustration. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. You know, Melody was an anomaly. She was, you know, fighting cancer with her chemo bag on her, strapped on herself, like
oh, no.
in the dirt, digging potatoes. Like she was made of other stuff. And I would not recommend that for anyone. So, you know, if you have been a really experienced gardener and you're realizing, okay, it's time to start making shifts. Obviously, some people aren't going to like totally overhaul their garden that they've spent, you know, decades cultivating. So what are, you know, suggested steps that people should take when evaluating transitioning into a more accessible garden?
Well, I think one thing is to just do a really hard look at your garden, do a walkthrough and evaluate where problems lie, where future problems, obstacles might be. A lot of it has to do with safety. You want to look for fall and trip hazards. Mm-hmm. Can you actually get around the garden or is maneuvering around the garden becoming dangerous? Mm. I think you want to look at a lot of your hardscape Are my walls in good order? You know, are they buckling? If you have like retaining walls, something like that. I think you go through and look at, are there plants that are dangerous? You know, are there thorny plants? Are there big overhanging branches? Are there trees that might fall? There's so many negatives when you're going to go through there that you have to really think. And it's hard to imagine yourself into the future. It's hard to imagine yourself as being older. And I have to say, until you get there, you don't realize what it's really like. Mm-hmm. You can have a great imagination, but you know, until you get there. So I think that's part of it. Evaluating your garden as far as just the physicality of it. Can you still get around and do it? And then the next part is asking yourself, what part of gardening do I really enjoy? Is there something I might want to pursue a new interest in gardening? Like somebody might decide that, you know, there's a specific type of plant that they want to explore more, or somebody might decide, oh, I just really want to get into container gardening. So, you know, and once again, it's really hard to, you know, there's so many different shapes and sizes of people's gardens, but that's a few things to consider. You know, what do I want to prioritize now?
What about tools?
Tools. Well, I think that whenever you can use a long-handled tool to avoid bending and crawling around on your knees, that's great. So anything long-handled, hose, weeders, things like that, that's a good place to start swapping out tools. Look for ergonomic tools. I think tools, garden tools have come a long way recently. When you say ergonomic, that term means that the tool is designed to help you work with it and designed so that it does not create muscle strain. A lot of tools like trowels and weeders, you want to look for something that keeps your hand in what they call a neutral position. You don't want it bent in a weird way when you're doing repetitive movement. And then there are lots of new lightweight battery operated tools that are great. And I do say that you should only use any kind of power tool, even if it is a battery operated one, if you still have a good sense of balance, if you have good vision, things like that, so that you know, and that you're not on some type of medication that makes you unsteady. You always want to make sure that you can do it safely. But like my latest tool that I really like, cordless hand pruners, you know, it's may not be as a nice of look, but I can go in there and deadhead a lot of perennials in one fell swoop. Whereas before I would be in there with my, you know, with my pruners, snip, 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 something like that.
Like a saw almost that's electric. So you're like able to do it in one fell swoop, or is it still like a pruner?
This is almost like a little smaller type version. It's small and then just has like a little fan of teeth. And you can go in there and just kind of shape perennials. It's not like something for, it's not like a saw type
like a
thing for a shrub.
Okay.
But it's an actual, I think it is called a cordless hand pruner.
Okay.
And there's a picture of it in my book where it's great for just doing little bits of shaping on things that aren't tough and woody, you know, more like perennial stems, things like that.
Mm. What advice would you give to the person who has decided to downsize their house and move into a condo or 55 plus living? Maybe there's an HOA who's starting fresh. So who's not, you know, downsizing their garden, but who's moving and has to start over again.
Well, in the book, there's a lot of my featured gardeners that have gone through that process just recently. And so I got lots of good tips from them. One of the best things they told me is, when you're looking like in a condo development or anything, well, the first thing before that, read the rules, read those homeowner association rules, because they can be very restrictive on what you can do. And so my friends who are in townhouses and condos now say, you know, hopefully you can drive around during the summer when people are actively gardening and see if there is actually evidence of gardening in these different ones. Does it look very sterile, or does it look like people are growing, you know, pots on their balconies, or if they have little plantings around their patios and things like that? So to see if that's the case. But, you know, when you're dealing with an HOA, that can get really, I hate to use the word thorny, because in an HOA, you might be subject to the whims of whoever is in charge at that moment. Mm-hmm. And so what their idea of gardening is might be completely different from what yours is. So, and those boards change, and the people that tend to get into leadership tend to be the ones that are going to push their ideas. Mm-hmm. And so you can get into places where they just don't want any, individual expression, let's put it that way, mm-hmm. creeping out into their patios and balconies. So, that is something you do need to look out for. But on the other hand, there's a whole lot of wonderful gardening experiences you can still have with a patio or a balcony. There are so many new ways to grow vertically. There are so many different new container options. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to mean the end of gardening. It's just going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people that have moved, downsized, say that they really enjoy that now because it's given them a whole different outlook. They feel like, it's a kind of reinvigorated their feeling for gardening.
Well, it speaks also to how you were saying, even if you're downsizing, focus on something that you really want to do and just do that. With a new garden, if you only want to grow flowers, you can only grow flowers. If you only want to do herbs or a kitchen garden, you could only do that. So it gives you that opportunity and also kind of puts you in not the beginner mindset, but, the new mindset where you get a new project that you have to
definitely take on. Yeah.
Let's go back to something you said when it comes to downsizing your garden and also probably applies to people who move as well. You talk about having the sit spot in the garden or, not just making it accessible by putting in raised beds. That's obvious, right? You don't want to bend over and be on your knees and raised beds. I'm 36. I only garden in raised beds because I don't want to, hurt my back. What about making it more accessible for joy?
Yeah. Well, I talk in the book about creating little destinations or what I call a way station. Maybe that's just a bench or even a chair, maybe out in a different area of your garden where you might go out there and just read. You might pull out your bird app on your phone and identify bird song, or some people make a little spot where they can go out and meditate or do yoga.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting out there. You don't necessarily have to be working in the garden. You should go out there and try to just enjoy it. And I know a lot of people that's really hard. They're going to sit there and they're going to look over and go, oh, I see a weed. And 2 hours later, they'll weed it a whole bed. Finding opportunities to enjoy your garden differently, I think that would be a great project, And part of that is keeping your mind open and curious. And that is good for your brain and overall health too. Some people are finding a spot to go out and they're painting their garden. I talk about garden adjacent activities, maybe photographing their garden, painting from it, doing different things. Like I have a friend who grows plants for dyes that then she uses in her artwork, things like that. So there are lots of times when the garden is just a stepping off point to another activity that keeps you engaged with life and nature.
Mm, I love that. And you also talk about when to not garden, right? Like when to hire, when to find a buddy, when to hire a garden. Like, how do you suggest moving through those decisions? Because I would assume if you've been a lifelong gardener and you have that mentality that you're always working, there's always a project to be done. And then all of a sudden you're like looking at hiring a landscaper or a gardener or help. I feel like that might be a blow to the ego, right? So what's the mindset or the reframe that you would offer people?
Well, I struggled with that. When I started getting help, it was, I felt like I was cheating. And then it was a blow to my ego. And when I first got help, I would go out there and work alongside them, even though I was paying them, look at me.
I'm still doing this.
Look at this. And then at some point I thought, just let them do it. And this is a shout out to Kurt, who does my pruning in many cases. Couldn't live without Kurt. But yeah, it's a blow to your pride and your pocketbook because you're paying for something that you've done for so long for yourself. And many times you want it done the way you want it done. And so there's a lot involved there. And when you go about looking for help, you have to decide, do I just need muscle or do I need expertise?
Mm.
Sometimes you need a combination, but that can help determine. Maybe you just need somebody who can haul a load of mulch to the backyard or something like that. And so that doesn't require a knowledgeable person. That can just be a teenager with a good back. But there are other times when you might want to reimagine a space and you need a landscaper or an architect, a landscape architect. And I am a big fan of just getting like paid hourly consults from experts, because like with a landscape architect, they may see your garden as a whole different thing than what you do. And it really helps to have fresh eyes. They may be able to identify hidden assets that you just weren't aware of because they think in terms of systems. It might be that you take a space and it becomes a completely different idea and you really enjoy it, you know?
Yeah. No.
Or, you know, it's like I wouldn't remodel my kitchen on my own. So you might go to a professional to have that done. It may be that you just want a landscape designer to suggest a few tweaks. It's all about, you know, your own situation, your unique situation. But I think that it's you get what you pay for, probably.
Yeah, I like the hourly consult idea, though, instead of a full hire, because you get the expertise you need, you might get the drawings you need, but then your ego still is maintained and your pocketbook might be made. It's probably cheaper to do a couple of hours of consults than, you know, a full landscape architect redesign. That's so interesting. And what does your Minnesota garden look like? So what level of help do you have? How have you set yourself up for success in your garden?
Well, as I said, when we built the house like 12, 13 years ago, I had three things I wanted. We live in a very walkable, very community-minded neighborhood. We moved mm-hmm. there on purpose for that. And I like to be able to engage. I'm an introvert. I'm up on my porch writing a lot. But I like to engage in just really natural, organic conversation that comes about when I'm out there gardening out in the front yard. So I say I garden to the front, the way we design the house. And so that's a pollinator-friendly landscape. You know, that was my last book I wrote, Pollinator-Friendly Gardening. And so that's all happening out front. And I write on the porch in the summertime, and I surround that area with lots of pollinator-friendly perennials and shrubs, things like that. So I can sit there and be distracted by the butterflies and the bees when I have writer's block. And then to the side of our house, to take advantage of that southern microclimate, is where I have my kitchen garden. It is Corten steel raised beds, a very lengthy linear type design that goes along that entire driveway. And I grow lots of different things. People are always surprised at how much I can fit into that area. And so that's done with a lot of planning and a lot of vertical gardening and, you know, things. I'm always maximizing my gardening real estate. And I probably, now that it's, you know, just my husband and I, probably grow way too much. So I give away a lot of my produce. I have a free box out on the steps. I'm known as the cucumber lady because, man, the cucumbers, I can't help but grow too many cucumbers every year, no matter how many times I reduce the number of plants.
I love that.
So, you know, and then I have my third thing that I really wanted was a water feature. So I have it's a pond, but it's geometric and it sits into my patio back there. And so that gives me the sound of water and all the wildlife that, you know, you get from running water, you know, dragonflies and birds and frogs and all that. So those were the three things I wanted. A front yard to garden and, you know, meet up with people in, my kitchen garden to grow food, and water, because water brings life to a garden.
And do you have garden help?
I have, as I said, Kurt. He
shout out
has been working with me probably for about 10 years now. He used to be with an actual company that would help me with a spring and fall cleanup, which I could do, but it would take me probably a week and I would be laid up afterwards. As I've gotten older, you know, stiffer joints, no matter if you're fit or not, the joints get stiff. So at that point, I usually get that spring and fall cleanup. And in the summer, he helps me with lots of pruning things. He's an artist when it comes to pruning. I stand on the ground and he gets on a ladder and I point and we shape all of our trees, and I give him credit for, you know, lovely. My beautiful trident maple looks out front, things like that. My honeysuckles are trimmed really nice. So yeah.
I love that. I know you have all these different gardener features in your book. So when people read it, they get all sorts of different, you know, insights. What was the most inspiring story that you featured that you might want to share?
I don't know if there's one. That's like making me pick a favorite child.
I know.
I
Maybe
don't.
One that's the most different than yours.
One that's most different than mine. Gosh, I don't think anybody's doing anything.
Or like maybe someone who relocated, so isn't doing landscaping.
Well, okay. Eric Johnson had a major, huge garden and relocated to a townhouse and just has a small patio now and a few beds. That was a huge change for him. And I think really emotional. You know, it's really hard to let go of a garden. And so I think that was something that struck me. I think of Dee Nash, who's in Oklahoma. And she has huge gardens, but she is slowly downsizing because she was bitten by ticks and got what you call she didn't get Lyme disease. She got what you call alpha gal, G-A-L syndrome, which is the red meat allergy issue.
Yeah.
And it has completely changed her life with how she eats and how she goes about so many of her daily activities. Mm-hmm. You have to watch out for not only your food, but your medicines and your cosmetics, things like that, because so many things come from mammals. And so she's actively engaged in reducing the size of her garden, but she's out there every day with her gardening videos and just impresses me with her just drive and she just keeps going, things like that.
You know,
well, I just think all of them, I think I included most of them in their book because they impressed me so with what they're
doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So where can people find you and where can people find your book? I think this book is a great read, not just for gardeners who are going through this transition, but for gardeners who are supporting their elders going through this transition. Yeah. You know, your book was very helpful for me to get insight into how I can help my mom more as she's transitioning. So where can people find you and where can people find your wonderful book?
Okay. My book is, we should tell them the name, Garden for Life, Strategies for Easier, Greener, More Joyful Gardening as We Age. It's available on Amazon. It's available at bookstores like Barnes & Noble. It's also available at all your indie bookstores. And if it's not there, you can ask them to order it. And then you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Blue Sky, a little bit on Twitter, but mostly not gardening there. Let's see here, my Facebook page, The Garden Buzz, working on a new website for my book and general news about speaking events. And then I usually do speaking events generally within Minnesota or places where I'm visiting, things like that. So you might look on the website at some point and see what's going on there.
Very nice. Well, we'll link to everything in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your wisdom. We appreciate you. And I wish you the best gardening season yet as we slowly crawl into spring.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, my friends, if you are on your 55 plus journey and you have just moved, if you've downsized, or maybe you're reimagining a garden that you've loved for decades, remember that gardening can grow with you. And I'm super thankful to Rhonda for reminding us of that and educating us on that, because obviously I'm not quite there yet. So I'm very thankful to lean on Rhonda in this moment. And I learned a lot. I'm really excited to be able to support my mom and other seniors in my community that might need some support making this transition. And frankly, a lot of the things Rhonda talked about are things that I already do because I like to be comfortable when I garden. So like growing in raised beds, I already do that, which I love. I hope this informed you. Once again, send it to someone who you think it would be helpful for. And of course, until next week, keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance.
If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.